Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening. It is Monday, August 1st, 2022. Kim Lakin and myself, Penelope Bennett, would like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio show sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. I am Penelope Bennett, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. And on my host team tonight is Kim Lakin from Colorado. And we are thrilled to be your hosts this evening. We have a great show planned tonight. This is scan number 2976. Tonight, our type of show is a special guest night. We have a very special guest. Her name is Amy Holly Campbell. She's from Leeds, the United Kingdom. Before we tell you a little bit more about Amy, we want to talk to you a little bit about NASCA and NASCA's mission. Because as you know, NASCA is all about child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first goal of educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo, of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts, showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal of NASCA is to offer hope and healing through numerous paths, such as these radio talk shows, providing many services and other services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anybody interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So if you'd like to get to know a little bit more about NASCA, what NASCA is all about and NASCA's mission, please visit NASCA's website, which is www.nasca, which is NAASCA.org. Kim and I will be hosting the show this evening, and Kim will greet any of our panel members that wish to call in and interact with our very special guest, Amy, on the show tonight. On our back line, we have a back line, and we encourage you to call in. If you'd like to participate in the show by asking our guests a question or a comment regarding their story, the number to do so is area code 595-2118. Again, the number is area code 646-595-2118. Kim will greet you on our back line and then welcome you into our show. And there's no experience required to call in. Just if you want to get involved, if you want to learn about what the show's about or what more about what NASCA's about or the issues that we discuss regarding child abuse intervention and prevention recovery, please call in. We encourage you to do so. I'd like to tell you a little more about our guest who we're expecting to call in this evening for our show. Her name is Amy Holly Campbell, and as was mentioned, she's from Leeds, United Kingdom, and she is coming on to the show tonight to tell her story for the very first time on the NASCA Stop Child Abuse Now radio show. So we are very privileged and happy to have Amy join us. Has a website, which we'll discuss a little later on the show, which has been part of her work and ongoing work in recovery. And as she explained to us and wrote in her bio that she provided us with before she came on the show this evening, she said a lot of the abuse she experienced at first was violent. She shared with us that her life started with a loving mother and an abusive father. She let us know that he would beat her mother and herself. And to quote Amy, she said, on one occasion, I was so frightened of him, I wet myself, so he smacked me for doing this. Drugs and alcohol took their turns affecting her family. And she told us that after a few years later, her mom finally decided to end the relationship. And as a result, her mother got into the wrong group of friends and started drinking heavily and taking illegal drugs. To quote Amy, the drugs turned my mom into an aggressive, verbally abusive person towards me at the age of 9 years old, constantly hitting and wishing I was never born. Amy says she thought, and I quote from Amy directly, I ruined her life by breathing, end quote. She states, during this time, she was hit with some confusing and devastating news that her dad was not her biological father and that she had been living a lie. Her father disowned her after he broke the news to her, and not long after the devastating news about her father, Amy was sexually abused by a stranger. The stranger was 18 and she was 19 years old. She had never told her mother at the time. She was petrified of her mother. And she waited 14 years after the person online. And then she then decided to report it because, and I quote, I hated the thought of this person hurting other children and family, end quote. Amy states, and I quote, I have so much more to write about my turbulent childhood and present life, but it would exceed the 300 words that we allot for the bio, so we appreciate that, Amy. She concludes, I'm here to share my life story and experiences and to inspire other trauma victims to come forward about their trauma and abuse. She wishes to have a career in helping others. So, wow. Wow, that's very profound. And I know that we're still waiting for Amy to call in. And I know that she's in the UK. And so sometimes we do things take a little bit longer. But I feel very honored to be one of the hosts on Amy's shows tonight. And I think, Kim, you and I can both attest to coming on an Ask a Show or on a show and telling about our life experience for the first time and what that experience is actually like. It takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, it's pretty scary to think about.
Yeah,
getting it out there for the first time. And I'm excited to hear more. I hope she can get through and we can have her. And if not, you and I will just chit-chat for an hour and a half because we're good at that.
Rather than listening to our shows, I know that we can do with no problem. There's nothing to do.
We'd love to have her, so hopefully she can make it on. And my heart just breaks for her already. So
me too.
Yeah, hopefully she does it at some point. She's able to come on.
I hope so. I'm actually reached out to the to send out a chat message. Chat to ask if they can follow up with Amy just to make sure that she knows exactly how to call in. But yeah, so we
sometimes time frames.
Yeah, exactly. There's always exactly, and the UK is very far away.
it is. You can see them on TV once in a while, but they don't look so far then. But yeah, they are. Have you ever been over to the UK?
I have been once, and that was amazing. But it was for a very brief time. I feel like I got a little flavor, but I'd really like to go back. Have you been?
No, I would love to go as well. Yeah, I have my friend across the street, she travels all over the place, and they just got back from, like, France and Nice, and, you know, I was like, oh, it's so beautiful.
Wow.
It's just so different. You know, it looks so different.
I know. I think travel is such a wonderful experience. It's actually one that I did not have in my childhood in terms of traveling outside the country. The first time I left the country, I went to go visit my brother who was studying abroad for college. And I'm really glad that I had that experience. But I think it is a wonderful experience to travel. And we try, you know, I tried as a mom to expose our kids to a little bit more international travel just to give them that exposure. But you know what it's like these days. Kim, travel is also very expensive, and COVID hit and all that stuff.
Yeah, and then all that other stuff that hit.
But I'll be a travel buddy.
Yeah, I know. We've talked about that before. We do some travel.
Be really, yeah, that
would
be so fun. In fact,
yeah.
I was talking to my kids, encouraging them. You know, they actually have some interest in working for international companies when they graduate from college, and I thought, that's great. You know, if you ever wanted to have an experience of working, you know, in a different country, you know, on the visa, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what my friend across the street, her daughter, is doing. She's kind of scoping things out because she wants to move overseas somewhere. And so they go on these little trips together, her and her daughter, and it's mm-hmm. really sweet. Yeah.
That is really sweet.
My kids,
I
think all they did was went to Arkansas like me. We just went to Arkansas, saw family all the time. That's all we did on our vacation.
Well, that's good too.
Well, it was good to have that, yeah, to build those relationships. It was nice. Yeah, and
but
you were just saying all your kiddos are home right now, huh? Kind of got people going in different directions.
I know, it's like the end of an era because, yeah, you end up leaving for college as well. They're all going to college out of state. We're moving out of, you know, our home. We're downsizing all at the same time. So we're literally, like, wrapping things up. And it's, you know, it's a big shift. And I think, you know, getting back to the core of what we do, I mean, managing big shifts, you know, or implementing your own big shifts, you know, in terms of what Amy's doing, in terms of, you know, her willingness to come on and tell a story for the first time. It's a huge shift to go from, you know, living in the secrecy of it to being very open about it. And I think huge shifts is a big theme, you know, that at least for me, it's been a theme in my life moving forward and, you know, and definitely now, you know, managing those shifts with what I've learned, you know, along the way is helpful. So, like, shifts just come. You got to learn how to, for me, I've had to learn how to manage them or try and manage them well. I don't always manage them well.
I know I don't manage shifts very well. I know I'm not good at that. But, I mean, that is huge because I know what you're doing. As far as moving out of your home that you raised your kids in at the same time that your last one is leaving. Because, I mean, I didn't do all of that at the same time, but when my son left, which was sooner than I thought it would be, you know, he was just ready to get out when he was 18, and my daughter stuck around a little bit longer. But it was so hard. I mean, it just, I guess I didn't realize for a while what it was doing, you know, how the toll that it was
mm-hmm.
taking on me, that finally everybody was out of the house. The kids were all gone. You know, what am I going to do now? now what should happen? And I mean, luckily, and I think it was all a God thing, I fell into, you know, being able to do the work that I do with child sexual abuse. So that has been great and taking my mind off of it a little bit, but it is,
mm-hmm.
it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know just you and I that have talked in the past and, you know, we wanted kind of the same things for our kids. We wanted to be there for them. So when you pour everything into your children
mm-hmm.
for as many years
yeah.
as you do, it's hard to
yep.
to do that stuff. It is. And so I just really feel for you and all you're going through right
Thank
now. And your
Thank
husband
you
is sick. And,
yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. Thank you for empathizing with that, because it really is hard, you know. It really is hard to, especially, you know, trying to be a good parent and give your child the childhood that you, you know, hope that they experience, putting so much effort into that. And then there's this ending when they go off to college. It's not the end of your relationship, but it's the ending of, it's another shift, and it's a change, and it's the ending of them, I guess, being school-age kids from under your roof before they, you know, they're going out into their independence. And it's really hard, and I'm almost like in shock. Because it went by really fast, like I say it does. And I just can't believe we're already here. And so, yeah, I feel like there's a loss that I'm also grieving, even, you know?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, exactly.
And I feel like, well, they do what they're supposed to be doing. So it's a happy loss, I guess, or grief, but it's still, you know, a sadness.
It's like they're doing what you raised them to do. They're going out and, you know, making a life on their own. And that's what we dreamed about, even though I know that I dreamed at times that they would get out of the house. And now and then it got here so fast, like you said. It was like, oh, my God. Wait a minute. Did I say that? But, I mean, even looking back, I just remember the fight, you know, like when they were fighting and bickering and stuff. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is never going to end. They're going to be this age forever, and they're going to just drive me out of my mind. And I had mine spaced out, I think, a little bit more than you did. So I had, you know, like, almost 30 years in elementary school with one, with all three of my children. So by the time elementary school was done, I was like, yeah, I'm ready to be out of it. But then I really missed it because all of the part, you know, the school parties and all that stuff that you do when they're little in elementary school. And I thought, well, I'll be able to do that with my grandkids, and it hasn't really worked out that way. So, yeah. I thought I would just kind of gradually go into, you know, taking care of my grandkids, but I do that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the kind of grandmother I want to be, very present for my grandkids. If my children, you know, want me, you know, and would appreciate my help, you know, that I would love to do that. Because I feel like it's really hard. Sometimes I felt very isolated, like I didn't have a lot of support when I needed it. And I also, you know, my family lived 2 states away, so there was some logistical, you know, challenges too to that. But, you know, at times I felt in rainy Washington, where everybody, you know, it's people are kind of stay to themselves, and I grew up in an area where we were kind of latchkey kids a little bit, and so I felt very isolated, and I felt, you know, like they're just, I craved community, and even if it wasn't family. And so, you know, I want to offer that, and I'm hoping that that's, you know, another, you know, shift in our lives when they get married and have kids, and that'll be a phase that I can, you know, be present in their lives and be involved with. But I hope so, but I guess, you know, you never know. But I certainly do, like you had said, hope that's part of the plan.
Right.
To be that present.
So I have.
Oh, sorry.
Oh no, go ahead. And you kind of broke up there again. So say what you were trying to say.
Oh, I thought maybe you were you the person that said having a grandkid is like, you know, eating all the ice cream you want without getting weight. It's like the best thing ever. But you don't, you know, really have to just, you know, the parents take on the hard.
No, but that's cute. No, I like that though. That's cute. Yeah, they are. It's my one of my friends who had 2 boys, and one of her boys, her oldest, is married, and they just had a baby. But she didn't think that they were going to have kids. You know, I guess they just kind of let everybody along. You know, don't ask us about it. We're not going to do it. And then surprise, we are going to do it. Mm. But it's so funny because she's just like I was, you know, with my first one. It's like, she goes, I was just drunk off of him. I actually left their house, got in my car, started driving, and had to pull over because I felt so delirious from seeing that baby and how perfect and beautiful. And I thought, oh, that's so sweet. It is, and you do, you kind of have, I don't know, I mean, I know that you want the best, hopefully, most parents want the best for their children as they're growing up, but there's just something about the grandchildren is like it's another level. Don't, you know, you want them to be perfect, and I'm leading into something here with this, Penelope. So, I got a call a few weeks ago from my granddaughter. It was a video call. And she's my oldest granddaughter. And she's the one that I pretty much, I raised her from the time she was born until she went to school. I had her full time and while her parents were working. And so, which my daughter hates when I say that. So nobody tell her I said that. But you did not raise her.
Not good word.
But she's almost 10. And you know, she just has a special place because she's my first. And I was with her a lot. And her mom called me first. And she goes, Sophia has something to tell you. And I was like, okay. And she showed me. And my granddaughter, at not even 10 years old, got mad at her parents. Well, first of all, I'll start from the very beginning. Actually, she and her friend, who spent the night before, took my daughter's credit card and called 7-Eleven or called DoorDash and had DoorDash deliver Slurpees from 7-Eleven at 1:30 in the morning. First of all, I know. It's like you want to kind of laugh, but then you're like, that's dangerous. I mean, you know, first of all, she shouldn't have been taking her mom's credit card. And then secondly, it's dangerous. And, you know, they're not even 10 years old yet. Well,
that's true.
The next night, and so she got grounded because, and she can't talk to that friend, I guess. I don't know all of the details. They don't always share the details with me. They just said she was grounded from talking to that friend. And the next night she was supposed to come up to visit me and stay with me for a few nights. And she got grounded from that. She couldn't do that either. So then she went into, or she went downstairs or something and decided to shave her hair off.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Dramatic. And yeah. And I was just like, okay, so, you know, I don't know. I don't even know what to think about that. I tried not to make a big reaction about it, you know, when she showed me. I didn't know all of the details when I first saw her. And she is very pretty. You know, some people can pull off no hair, and she can do it. She's very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I just can't imagine my kids doing that, and I don't know what, like, where society is going or what is it that led her to do that? You know, where would she get this idea? Where would, you know, was it Britney Spears or, you know, it's frustrating to me because I don't have control over that situation. Here is my sweet little granddaughter who is now doing all of these things that are going to get her in trouble. And she could get into real trouble. I mean, she's young. So what's your take on that, Penelope? What would you do as a grandmother having that situation? I mean,
you know,
there's nothing you can really do, but I guess you can think.
It's easier for me to sit here, you know, on my sofa and Bobby Washington eating, you know, eating blandly salted popcorn for dinner, saying, well, you know, and I can definitely, you know, opine from the couch, and I will, so thank you. I mean, of course, I'm not the grandmother, I'm not the mother, and I don't know the child. But to me, it's one thing to think that you're going to do that, you know, but it's another thing to actually follow through and do it. And to me, it's an expression of trying to express something that is not going right in her life. And she's angry, and she wants someone to pay attention to her. And it sounds to me like she's, you know, yes, she got punished because she's asking for some sort of attention because something's going on.
Right.
I mean, kids are 10 years old. You know, it's one thing to, you know, we've been parents, you know, it's like for them to act out, but I think that's a, you know, that's an action that is very bold, and I think it's a statement, and I think that there is something hidden there. There's
that
is a call to action. She's verbalizing non-verbally a call to action from authority to do something about what I had no idea. So what do I think? I think it's
right.
A call to action. What the only way she feels or she knows she can communicate. But of course
something drastic.
Well, I just think the action's pretty, I mean, that's, to me, that's a call to action. I mean, like I said, maybe a million times I wanted to do something, but I didn't actually do it. I thought about it, right? I was mad. But that's a pretty, you know, to actually think about it, but then to do it, you know, that takes what's another level of, you know, I think, intent. And it's willful, you know, it's, there's an intentional, willful, component. And to me, I don't know, maybe because I'm getting so much older, Kim, but 10 seems young, right? That's
yes.
A young child.
Yeah.
Trying to send a big message.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I just, and of course, you know, as parents of the parents, right, it's like, you know.
Right.
It's like we have no authority, right? We're not guardians. You know, offer it if asked or even if not asked, but we don't know if it's going to be accepted or, you know what I mean? That's a tough position to be in.
And it's not, as a matter of fact, with this child of mine. She doesn't want my input on anything. And whenever I do give my input, she lets me know and puts me in my place. So, there's nothing on my end that I can really do. I was just, you know, like just kind of telling about it. And what do you think about that? I mean, because I feel the same way. I feel that was really drastic. I know that my daughters, I think both of my daughters at one point when they were little, cut their bangs. And I think that's probably a pretty normal thing for kids to do. I don't remember my son doing it, but I do remember my daughters doing it. So I think that's kind of, you know, because you get, I can make this hairstyle, and, you know, you can't. So, I think you're right. And I worry because this is happening so young already and just what that's going to do, because my daughter doesn't want any of my opinions at all, ever. Matter of fact, we tried to go to counseling together and it just backfired. As a matter of fact, I think it made our relationship worse. And so, but it's hard because I love them so much. They're my grandbabies. and I can't, so she finally was able to come up and spent a couple nights with me after it had happened. And, you know, and I tried to talk to her and she just said, I just wanted to do it. You know, she's just so matter of fact about it. It's not even like she really regrets it or anything. Although, and her parents haven't really punished her for that in a way that I would, that's not true, because they've humiliated her on Facebook, and I don't agree with that at all.
Mm.
I don't think that that's right, that they had to post that. They didn't have to. You know, there could have been other things, but then they turn around and now they're in Disney World together. So, you know, there's such mixed messages going on, I think, with her, and I see exactly what I didn't want to happen with when I was raising my kids is, you know, her mom and dad both have to work. And so mm-hmm. her dad does work at home, been doing that since COVID. But so he's there with them, but they're, you know, they're not really, they don't get the same kind of attention that I gave my kids, you know, and I see
mm-hmm,
that. I notice
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me sad. It makes me sad, but yeah, I don't know. It's hard to.
Well,
it's hard being.
Speaking, I'll just say, coming from a mom that worked full time when her kids were really little, and I didn't want to, I had to.
Right.
I will tell you, for me, I had a lot of resentment for anyone that got to spend time with my kids because I couldn't, because by necessity I had to work, and that was so hard for me because I was dying to stay home with them. And so I'm not saying that your daughter is, but I will openly admit that. I mean, I did send them to a great daycare, and I think for three active boys all year apart, I really tried to find any. I couldn't find anybody that could handle them. You know, anyway, I think they were safer there. But
you had to stay home eventually.
But also, it was, you know, it was more of like there were several teachers in the class, and it wasn't like there was one-on-one attention. And so, you know, I remember having a nanny for my first son until he was about 9 months old. And I was very jealous of that one-on-one time she had. I'll admit it. You know, it was hard to share my baby with someone else, even though she was a wonderful nanny and she loved him, was very nurturing. So I don't know. That's just coming from me. And now as I think about it, you know, you got to work in this life. You got to work in this life because you got to pay your bills, you know. And so it was, you know, not fair to the person who was caring for my child to be jealous of them, but I was, and I had resentment. I really did. So I don't know if that's going on with your daughter, but, I mean, I just know from me being a working mom when my kids were young, I felt that way. And it's, you know, and it's projection, right? Like I'm projecting my own, you know, regret that I had, you know, that I couldn't do what I wanted to do. I was just projecting all those emotions onto somebody else. And it's really just not fair to the person now, I can just say, you know, that I was, you know, projecting them on just, you know, I mean, they didn't do anything but offer to help, you know, work for the money or offer to help.
Right.
You know, but.
Well, it's just hard anyway. I know it's hard being a working mom, no matter their age. Because I never did, well, I always did babysitting. That's what I did to make sure that I could stay home with her. I would, or with my kids, so I'd always have babysitting jobs. So that worked out okay because I was here and everything. But I know the guilt from the times that I did go out and work outside of the home.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the guilt, but just how hard it is physically because, you know, a lot of times you're the mom is the one that takes care of everything in the house. And so, you know, you go get another job outside of the house and it's a second full-time job. It's not the, you know, your only full-time job, it's your second.
So hard. That is true.
So, yeah.
And then if
now
you were like me.
You're not going back.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Me? Then if you were like me, like not only was I working full-time and then, you know, being a full-time mom when I wasn't working and wanting to soak in every minute of being a mom and a wife when I wasn't working, but I hadn't gone through, you know, I hadn't really done the work, you know, to address, you know, what happened to me in my childhood. And so I was carrying all that heaviness. Talk about, not only is it hard to work full-time and be a full-time, you know, mom and, you know, two full-time jobs, but then when you're carrying stuff, I mean, it was, that was backbreaking.
It is. Yeah. Because you don't even
realize,
I think at times, you're in a fog. You just go. You just
totally.
Do it.
No, it wasn't until I collapsed at, I collapsed about five and a half years ago. I literally collapsed. Like I literally, like the Energizer Bunny ran out of battery. That I was forced to kind of say, okay, what is going on here? And, but yeah, you're right. You're just on autopilot. No one can see, recognize it. But then again, I mean, to have your own mom that cares for your child if you're working outside the home. I mean, for me, I didn't have that option. But you know
right.
that's the only other, you know, there's a very small handful of people that are going to really love your kid like you do. And your and the grandparents are should be one, you know, could be an extension of that.
Yeah.
You know, because you want to know that your kids are well cared for and in the right hands. Well, I know you know that. That's what you do in terms of advocating for children to be in the right, you know, conditions.
Right. Yeah, it's funny because that that daughter who doesn't – all of my kids have taken the class. I'm just not sure they absorbed it very well. Because she does things totally opposite. Like we're at a restaurant, and my granddaughter will ask to go to the bathroom, and she'll be like, "Yeah, go ahead and go." And I'm like, "No." So now my granddaughter knows if I'm with her, I'm going to go with her to the bathroom. She knows it, but I know that when I'm not with her, she goes by herself. And it, you know, just that little thing. My daughter doesn't understand because she never went through that. She never had to watch out for an abuser. She never experienced that in her childhood. So she takes it for advantage. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And thank God that she didn't.
Yeah.
But do you think that it lays upon her how her decision to allow her child to go to the bathroom unsupervised would fall on you? Do you think she's aware of you know, that, how you observing that decision would maybe how that would weigh on you? Is she aware of that?
I don't going to say something kind of mean. I just don't think she cares. I really don't.
I'm sorry.
I think there's and that's what's so scary, is I think that, you know, almost to the same degree that I didn't want to raise my children the way that my parents raised me. I feel that with my daughter, like, I was such a bad mom that she can't raise her kids the same way that, and so she can't listen to anything that I have to say. I mean, that's kind of what I feel. And so it's hard. I mean, and then you've got the grandchildren on the other part. She's got three of them, three of my grandchildren. And so trying to spend time with them and talk to them and have a relationship with them, too, I worry, you know, what am I going to say that's going, that, you know, is it going to set her off or whatever, even when they come to spend the night with me. But yeah, it's rough. It's hard being a...
That is really rough.
A grandparent on the outside. It's like we're, you know, with our kids, like you said,
I'm walking in the shoes right now. I walk in the shoes of kids just having, for me, I feel like my kids are angry with me. I think they're angry at even the thought of the fact that their mom was abused. They're angry with me for, you know, doing the work to heal from it, to bring it out, to, you know, to heal from it, doing the advocacy work. You know, they just, they're angry. I don't know if they're angry because it happened or angry because, you know, I took a stand and it was very different from, you know, the secrecy and you know, suppression of the events in my family and, you know, and they're angry at the disruption, you know, those that are, you know, angry that I, you know, took a stand and did something about it. Especially since I think that there are other victims. And it's really hard to, you know, you love your children. And for me, I mean, yeah, we heal for ourselves. I mean, I heal, you know, so I can not only work on myself and do the work, but also that, you know, I can disrupt a pattern that's been going on. It's for the benefit of not only me. And so it's just, you know, when you love your children like you love your children, like I love my children, it's very painful. I found it very painful when I feel like my kids are just the anger and rejection of it all. I know I can't force them to, you know, have a certain reaction, but it certainly hurts, you know, when the reaction is one that is painful I guess how I should word it.
And I don't know, I mean, your kids are still in college, even where mine aren't, but I guess I thought at this point in their lives, like my oldest daughter's almost, she's 35 almost, in a month she'll be 35. And it's like at this point I thought that I could have, I could talk to them about this a little bit. You know, I didn't want to throw it all on them or anything, but I also was tired of keeping it all a secret and not ever talking about it. And so that's, I think, what surprises me the most about especially my oldest daughter, is I just thought maybe I would have this relationship with her where I could say, okay, why are you, you know, we could go out to lunch or something and say, why are you so mad at me about this?
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
What is the deep-rooted reason? And explain to me why, you know, like you say, you don't know exactly mm-hmm. why they treat you this way, why they lash out, but I wish I could just talk to her, and I know I can't because I've tried. So I don't know if she's just not ready to talk yet. You know, I know I probably started thinking about, you know, doing work. And no, by the time I was 30, I was going to counseling. So yeah, I was starting to do the work already by the time I was in my 30s. So, you know, I don't know if she too, like a lot of people do in their 30s, are going through a lot of trying to figure things out. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but you were young. I mean, when John rattles off the statistics, because he knows them so well, I mean, being 30 years old and addressing what happened to you and going into, you know, doing the work and starting, you know, starting that process is pretty young. I think the average age is like 54 or something. So you were definitely ahead of the curve, you know, there.
Right.
But that being said, gosh, I wish I'd started when I was 30, you know. I don't know, there are people that never want to do it, too. There are just people that never want to do it.
Yeah.
That should. Well, I don't know. Maybe that's judgmental. That may realize the benefit if they did, but have chosen not to. I just don't think that keeping it all in ever withstands over time, you know, the intent to, you know, think if you ignore it, it doesn't exist. I just don't think that holds true. I think eventually what you hold inside somehow manifests itself. But you know, I'm learning, you know, I've learned the heart, you know, you just can't, unfortunately, even for those that we love so much, you can only invite, I mean, you can't take a hand in that. It has to come from them.
Yeah.
And you love someone so much, like a child or a sibling or a parent, it's really hard. I think, I don't know, especially your children. Because you really try and do things. Like what you said, right? You try and, you know, you want to give them a much different experience. You know, it's out of the intent is totally out of love.
Right.
At least for me, I feel like it's a thankless job. It's hard.
Yeah, it really is. Why do we want it so bad?
Yeah, exactly. But I got to keep the faith. Like that's when I just, I'm like, oh, I just got to keep the faith that one day the ship will change its course. I hope it will for both of us.
Yeah.
I really did.
Well, yeah. I keep thinking it's got to. Something's got to happen.
Well, we've seen other issues where people have, you know, become activists and have really, you know, taken a stand and worked hard. And there has been change and there has been more acceptance and there have been shifts, you know, in the general public. And I think it's, you know, change is possible. So I do have hope. It's just, you know, we're just still on the cusp. We're not, you know, it hasn't happened yet, I feel. It hasn't happened yet.
yeah. You know.
So do you think Amy's going to call in?
No.
I don't either.
I don't, which is too bad. Yeah, that's too bad.
Well, I'm sorry. That's unfortunate. So if you're listening in to the show and you'd like to call in and just pose a question, chat with Kim or myself, ask us a question about NASCA, about NASCA's mission, or about any of the topics that are, you know, around child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, recovery, call in. Throw out a comment or a question. We
yeah.
welcome your call.
Yeah. We.
Have comments about my granddaughter shaving her hair?
Yeah.
I think that's how it all started.
You know, I'm not an early childhood education specialist, but I just, you know, and I know that there's certain things like cutting hair or shaving, you know, shaving your head that, you know, kids do or, you know, parents can't really control. But there's some pretty radical things going on right now with our youth and a lot of things that, you know, I feel like until a child's brain is more fully developed, you know, there are some, you know, life-changing decisions being made by kids now that parents are supporting. And I am really struggling with that. I'm not saying that, you know, people can't take control over their destiny, but, you know, to me it's more of like what defines a child, right? You know, what defines a child and how do we protect our children, you know, to not make the wrong life-altering decision until their brains have been, you know, biologically developed to make the scope of the decision that some of these children are making at a very, very young age when I solely consider them to be children. So I know it's a really sticky subject, but it's something that I've been thinking a lot about lately. I think, because I feel like some parents are now just afraid to intervene.
Well, and I think, yeah, and everybody just wants to let them decide for themselves, but they can't at that young age, like you said, because their brains aren't developed. If they don't, you know, it's kind of like, well, my granddaughter shaving off her head. You know, it's like they can't think completely through all of the consequences and what's going to happen and what they will, you know, but that whole situation looks like. So, yeah, I mean, it does scare me, too. I think, you know, I've got a gay son who has been afraid, I think, for a long time to come out, and he just finally, with his partner now, has started to feel free enough to do that. And he's 23 years old, you know, so he didn't make this decision, even though my daughter say that he made that decision at a younger age. They thought he was at a younger age. You know, he didn't just jump right into it. But I don't know how I would have reacted if he would have come to me at, like, let's say 10 years old and said, I'm, you know, transgender. I don't know. That's, like you said, it's a very hard subject. Very sticky subject. I'm surprised nobody will call in. Somebody might call in for that subject.
They may call in.
But I think that I will, you know, at some point, I think in my family, just because, you know, my kids are all having kids and stuff, we might see that. You know, I've already almost got six grandkids. So and that's where society is. It seems to be a big thing to be, you know, to be that, or to be friends or with those, you know, with those people and make that decision at a young age. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot.
Well, I think projecting shame onto a child is one thing. you know, versus, you know, condoning a life-altering decision that they're just not biologically and developmentally ready to implement because they just don't have...
Like surgery.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah. I think, you know, shame is a different thing, right? I think, you know, we can accept and allow them to have their, you know, I was told I couldn't have feelings. I couldn't have an opinion, right? I couldn't have a reaction when I was hit or when I
right.
was abused. You know, I wasn't, those were things, and I was shamed, right? Those were things I wasn't allowed to have. So I think that there's a line between stifling agency in terms of, but that type of, you know, and I know agency is a really broad term, but to stifle, you know, healthy emotional expression versus, you know, I think part of it is we have to, as parents, we have to guide our children to make discerning decisions, well thought out decisions at, you know, the right time. And I think, you know, I do depend on the biology of development to help me understand when the right time is. You know, I don't understand, you know, I'm not a neurologist and I'm not a physician and I don't know, you know, all the ins and outs of anatomy. I know something about it, but I do know that the brain development for children, for girls and for boys, I mean, there is a developmental stages, right? And they're both physically and psychologically. And so, you know, I think to me, to rely on the science of it, you know, is important so that I can know, you know, what's appropriate, you know, when is biologically and emotionally, you know, when are these types of decisions, is a child able to use the right amount of, I mean, the right balance of discernment, generally speaking, you know, to make life-altering decisions. And so that's, you know, to me that's a different decision as a parent than to stifle the right to an emotion or to shame. To shame for feeling a certain way or having a tendency. I mean, I just, you know, that is something that I think that is not responsible. That is, well, for, you know, in my own experience, I come from my own experience, but there's a difference between shame and then really sort of, I guess, yes, I don't know, just being permissive to allow a child to do something that's life-altering before a child is ready. I know I'm typically in a can of worms now, so I don't know what you think about that, but I'm not having. But, in, you know, in terms of just, because it's our job to protect our children. We are the parents.
Yeah.
There is a role, a responsibility there.
Right. And it doesn't stop when they go off to college either. I mean, actually, I think
mm-hmm.
you worry more when they're gone. But, yeah. I don't know either. I know I have a friend whose son is trans, and, but of course he did. He was older too when he made that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think he decided when, I mean, he was, he got married, but apparently his wife knew that he liked to cross-dress and stuff, but then it got to the point where he really wanted to make, you know, more permanent changes, and his wife didn't agree with it, so I guess she was okay with him dressing, cross-dressing or whatever, but again, we're not talking, you know, we're not talking children like you're talking about. I'm talking about a grown man who has made that decision. And I think there's also going to be a curiosity. So if you let your child transition at a very young age, I think at some point they're going to say, well, I wonder what it would have been like to be that. I mean, because they never had an opportunity to. If they're changing when they're so young,
mm-hmm.
they don't know anything different. So, yeah. didn't get any calls on it, Penelope, though. It's kind of
only
a slow night.
Yeah. So can you, I know that NASCA, you know, supports other organizations, and can you talk a little bit about the HOPE PYX Global conference coming up in Houston in October?
Oh, yeah, that's so exciting. I am so honored to be a part of that. Yeah, it's going to be really exciting because, and I know they're running like crazy, but so HOPE PYX Global is a nonprofit and that is supporting and helping people who have been victims of human trafficking, domestic violence, sexual assault, and any other gender-based violence is what they say. And Victoria Valentino, which is she's a Cosby survivor and a Playboy icon. And I know I've seen her on like TV and stuff before. I know I've seen her talking about it before. Her and Miss Texas, Eileen Song,
yeah,
who was on our NASCA show one night. Yeah, that's how I got connected with her. So they're starting this nonprofit. And not only is this conference going to happen, which is a two-day conference in October. It's October 20th and 21st in Houston, Texas. But they're also doing an international book award. So
yeah,
my testimony was entered into the international book awards, and I'm a finalist for that as well. So
that's
pretty
so awesome.
Exciting. I never expected to be a finalist on that. But there's different categories, and so I fall into the category of spoken words. So it's not my whole book that I wrote.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Congratulations. That was really exciting.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, I just had a cough. I just put on mute real quick. But there's going to be, of course, Miss Texas is one of the speakers, and then Victoria Valentino. And then they're also having the award ceremony, a gala. So I was just telling my daughter the other day, I was like, we're supposed to get all dressed up, like a Hollywood movie star or something. I'm
oh
like,
my God.
I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to get that dressed up. And I'm not sure I own anything that's that fancy. So I need to work on that. But I'm just really excited to be a part of it because it's going to be, I think it'll be a really good conference. And I think it's just the start of a nonprofit that's really going to do things and help, you know, help survivors heal. And
absolutely.
So, yeah. And I saw that you were an ambassador as well for them. So.
Yes, for the state of Washington. And
yeah.
And I, like I've told Mask and I told Eileen, I just, the next 6 months of my life are just really unpredictable with my husband's illness, and we're moving to Sarasota actually October 17th. So when she told me what the conference was, I was like, oh my God, I can't be moving on the 17th. But yeah, so that's, you know,
yeah.
I'm doing minimal amount of involvement now, but I'm hopeful that, you know, the beginning of the year, as we settle in and praying that my husband's treatments are successful, that I can pick up more and do more and become more involved, because both NASCA and, you know, HOPE PYX Global, what, you know, incredible organizations that are, especially, you know, especially with the mission of HOPE PYX Global, it's going to do amazing, amazing work and help so many people. And I'm really privileged. I feel very honored and blessed to be a part of it. I'm looking forward to getting more involved. She is so inspirational, Eileen.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, she has an incredible platform. And I love her show, The Miss Texas Show. And so.
I mean, she's done so much. It's like I, at times, look at, you know, myself and say, have I done enough? You know, it's like I'm just now starting this process. I'm just now going into this, you know, within the last 5 years. And so, but, you know, you look at someone like her who has done all these pageants, you know, really made a difference in a real noticeable, tangible way.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you're just like, yeah. She's pretty inspiring, I think.
Very, very inspiring. Very inspiring. And I can resonate with that feeling. Sometimes I feel like, you know, God, I wish I could do more. You know, I wish I could make more. I could move the needle a little more. I could get more involved and do more. And then I remind myself, you know, I think you're doing as much as you can right now. And for better or for worse, we've got a long ways to go, you know, with bringing awareness to all these issues that NASCA, you know, in terms of what we address in our mission statement and what Hope POX Global is doing. And, you know, for better or for worse, there's going to be a lot of work still to do. I keep telling myself, you know, when you have more bandwidth, you will be able to do more and you will do more, you know, unfortunately, it's still going to be there and there's still going to be a lot of work to be done.
Right. Unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Hopefully we can make some kind of a difference at some point. But I think we are. I think so.
Absolutely. And sometimes I think, you know, it's like planting a seed, you know, seeds, they germinate for a while. They don't grow out of the soil right away, you know. But you plant enough seeds, you're going to produce something. And it was, I think, a couple years after I came on NASCA for the first time. It was a couple years afterwards. And I hadn't broadcasted to anyone that I had done it. Out of the blue, I got a Facebook message from my cousin. They must have, like, Googled my name for some reason. And they found that my scan, the number, my name, and NASCA and the scan number. And they listened to the show. And they reached out to me. And this was 2 years later. And they were completely, obviously, you know, because it lived in a family with lots of secrecy, they were completely unaware. But there was gratitude in the fact that I had taken that step. And there was, I think, some relief that someone had finally spoken and said something. And I was, and it was, they responded to having listened to the scan with, it had a positive result. And it was something that I wasn't expecting. But because I planted the seed and I'd done it, you know, and it's out there, the truth is out there. For, you know, I felt like, you know, when you do that, it's an invitation too, but it's planting a seed. And when someone was, you know, ready to go and do a little, you know, was curious enough to do some digging in terms of our family history, you know, there it was, you know, to be uncovered. And there was benefit, you know, that was derived from it. And so I was, you know, from that experience, you know, I always remind myself that if you keep doing, you know, we're hosting the shows, you do your darkness to light work, and if you keep planting those seeds and doing that work, you know, it will take hold. You know, it might not be on my time frame, but, you know, it will happen. Eventually it will happen as long as you keep planting them. You know, not all seeds are duds. You know, I keep telling myself that. Not all fishing poles that you put in the water, not all of them get a bite, but some of them do, you know. You just got to keep putting the fishing poles in. So that's my little my little share for the day. But and that inspired me, you know, to keep doing the work that I'm doing.
Oh,
it was
a great
story. Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, you never know how people in your family of origin are going to respond. But we know that child abuse is a heinous crime, and we know that it's wrong. And we know that secrecy and protecting the perpetrators is wrong, right? It enables the proliferation, you know, and the cycle of abuse to continue because the secrecy, you know, is a shield, you know, is what perpetrators hide under secrecy. It enables them to continue on doing what they're doing. I mean, we know that they're heinous crimes, and we know that they're against the law. And so we know this, you know, we know they're, you know, these criminal acts, the impact that they have on people. And so we know that what we're doing is for a greater cause than even our own. And sometimes, you know, I have to remind myself of that. That it is true. And
right,
it is important.
Yeah. We don't know who's listening on the other end, right? Never. At any show.
That's true.
Now, did you never met that cousin before?
Oh, I've met them. Yeah, I've met them. They just live,
yeah.
They live a couple states away. And it's actually not a first cousin. It's like my first cousin's daughters, you know, so it's second cousin. And so they're basically a generation younger than I am. But, you know, I just had knowing the secrecy of my own family and now what I understand to be the pervasiveness of the abuse and the, you know, multi-generational cycles, right, that it's just been going on. For a very, very long time, you know, through our lineage. You know, I know that so many of us, you know, within that lineage have a similar story. And so I know that the way it was received, I know that there's a lot of pain out there. There are a lot of, you know, suppressed events and, you know, a lot of things that have never come to the surface and that, you know, so... For me, I just know that, you know, I may be the tip of the iceberg, but there's a huge iceberg underneath. And I might be the only one that peeks through at the top. I hope I'm not, but someone's got to do it. So they're not direct cousins, you know, if, like I said, if you look at our family tree, look at the lineage and you look at the pervasiveness and the patterns and the manifestations of the behaviors of, you know, the people that have been hurt, you know, you can just, it's very apparent, right? It's very obvious. But no one, you know, because we were such a secretive family, no one ever states what's going on. No one ever talks about what's going on or even the coping mechanisms, you know, that our relatives we observed, you know, doing to, you know, deal with the abuse. And we were forbidden forever speaking it. We couldn't even acknowledge it. It was just forbidden. But anyway, yeah, I more of a distant cousin, but, God, there's so many of us out there with, you know, within that lineage. So again, just kind of back to planting that seed and that was, I mean, of all the people that I was, you know, wondering if they would ever hear my story, you know, that was not, they were not on my radar. I'll just put it that way, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad that they did. I'm so glad that they did. So you never know. That's the other thing. I guess you just never know. You never know once you do it and you finally, you know, speak your truth and break that, you know, cycle of secrecy. You just, you never know who's going to benefit from it. And that was very, that was very surprising to me, and it really gave me a lot of hope that I could continue to do a lot of good, whether it was within my family or outside of my family. Even those we discussed at the beginning of the show, the first time I came on, I mean, I was shaking in my boots. I was so scared. I thought, what am I doing? And I'm going to get in so much trouble for this. And, oh, my gosh, I'm, you know, totally break, you know, I'm going out there and doing, you know, the worst thing you could possibly do in our family, which is disclosing, you know, something that these heinous crimes that were so horrible. And am I going to be able to show my face in the world tomorrow because, you know, what I'm going to be speaking about, you know, I've never done it before. I hadn't done it before. I thought I'm not going to be able to walk outside. And what was so amazing, at least for me, is, you know, after I had done it, the show, after the show is concluded. And, of course, NASA, the platform, is just so wonderful because the hosts are obviously NASA family members who have had similar experiences. The panel, same NASA family members who'd have very similar experiences. I'd never been met with any understanding of that empathy and the understanding of shared experience. And just even being in such a – I was very taken aback. I'd never been in such an environment like that, a platform where, you know, I could just shed the shame and I could just truly be myself and talk about what had happened. And so between actually speaking of it and bringing it out in the open and having been supported by the hosts and the panel, the very opposite thing happened to me. Then, you know, after the show the very next day, instead of being ashamed and worrying if I could step outside and show my face, I thought it was the first time I could step outside and show my face and stand tall and not have any shame and really, really show up in this world as myself.
Yeah.
It was the best thing I've ever done.
And you deserve it.
Thank you. Thank you. So it was profound, and I did not expect that. It was something I would have never anticipated. And that's, you know, I know, you know, we've talked about this a lot, Kim, but that's the hope that comes along with the work, you know, the work and healing and speaking and being involved, and which is what you've done. And how can you go, I guess, how can you go back? I can't go back. I can't just go back to the way I was and suppress it all and stop talking about it, because that's not who I am anymore. I'm not on that side of the issue. I'm on the other side. And I can't go back.
As much as some family would prefer if you do. I'm sure.
Yeah. And children. Prefer that you do.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's still so much more that I can do, for sure. And I felt like, you know, you feel like you can't ever do enough. But, yeah, I think we're doing our part. Now, were you teaching already, or did you not start teaching until after you told your story?
I had started to teach before I told my story. Yeah.
Yeah.
But my teaching really expanded after I told my story. I was actually, I expanded to other departments. It was almost like I just kind of, I don't know, like a flower that finally blooms open. You know, just things started to come together and happen.
Right.
Miraculously in that regard.
I know. That's my God thing. That's what I'm like, yeah. That has to be God because it just comes together so easily. Yeah.
So. But it hasn't been.
Now, are you planning that too? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go on.
No, I was just going to ask you if you had planned on doing more teaching. I know right now you're busy and you'll be busy with your husband.
Well,
but when you move, planning on doing?
Yeah, I am planning on teaching. So the degree program that I'm teaching in now at Bellevue College, they actually were awarded a grant, and the grant is being used to start an online program for our degree, because right now it's an in-person program, so they were actually going to then be recruiting a second cohort. So with my move and my husband's, you know, illness and not knowing if I could actually physically be in a classroom, that is going to be a perfect way for me to still teach the students I love and teach what I love to teach, but I can teach now from anywhere. I mean, being online, honestly, isn't my first choice. I'd love to be more in front of people, but I love the program, and so, you know, I still want to be involved in it in some way. So so this year they actually, they're working on getting the recruitment of students, and they'll actually start their online program next year. So I'm technically on sabbatical, so it all worked out kind of for a year.
Yeah. Oh, that is good. Well, I'm glad. Because I know when you find something that you really love to do, you hate to give it up.
Yeah.
Even if you've already made plans to move somewhere else.
Exactly.
It's all coming together.
So that being said, you know, anything can happen. I hope the opportunity is still there, you know, in a year when the online program happens. I hope it is. And I think that's the other thing, Kim, is that I just feel like, you know, I've learned to, you know, if I can transcend, if I can work hard to do this kind of work, then, you know, I can kind of work hard if I really want to do something else, you know, whether it's a different profession or learn a different skill. It did give me some confidence to know that, you know, that things are possible. It doesn't matter how old you are or what's happened to you, that if you're determined and you're willful, that you can make it happen.
Yeah.
So...
Now, are one of your children going to be in the same state as you when you move, or no? They'll all be different.
No, they're going to be in different states. So one of them, I know. So we'll be between Washington and Florida, kind of by coastal, you know, depending on the season, and where my husband's in treatment. So we'll be in Washington, Sarasota, but then my sons will be in either – one's in Los Angeles, one's going to be in Dallas, Texas, and one's going to be in Nashville, Tennessee. So we're going to be
– Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All over.
They're going to be all over. Hopefully one day we'll all, you know
– No.
They'll all come together, but it's – they'll still come for holidays. You know, we said, well, we'll pay to fly you where we are for holidays. So that's the deal, you know.
Yeah.
They're okay with that. But yeah, it's definitely. Sorry, go on.
Does your husband work remotely too?
He can work remotely, and so he'll even on the when we're back in Florida, he'll fly out once a month to Seattle to check in with his office. So he'll kind of be commuting once a month, but. That he can he can largely do it remotely, which he's more of a transactional real estate professional where he can kind of do transactions from anywhere. He doesn't really need to be in person. So that's kind of nice anyway. But, you know, how COVID just kind of made, you know, working remotely possible where it wasn't possible before. So I think he can do even more now. And I obviously can do more now than I was able to, even though I didn't like being in COVID and I hate COVID, there was that aspect of it that was a benefit, I think.
Right. And I know the curriculum that I go out and teach as well became, and virtual as well. And so that was kind of nice once that all happened and to still do that, because especially if you're trying to talk to schools who have a ton of teachers, you know, you can set up a couple days for training and do it virtually. So, yeah, that's so nice. I'm so glad you're able to still do your job. That's awesome.
Thank you. So how many of your trainings are, you know, when you go out and you talk and you do your work for Darkness to Light, how many are in person and how many are virtual now?
So what I do is I set up two virtual ones a month, whether I have people or not. And then usually I get some people on it, but if not, then I can just cancel it. So I schedule those every single month, a couple times. And but I'm still trying to get out into the schools and the preschools and the churches and things like that. So my new focus is my 2-year-old granddaughter's preschool, so I got to watch her the last 4 days while her parents were out of town, and then her other grandma took over. But But yeah, I did. I get excited, and it's fun for me to know that I'm out there, you know, helping other people understand how they can stop this, how we can get ahead of this.
Yeah,
you know, pandemic. Because it is. I mean, it's been a pandemic for a long time. People don't call it that, but I mean, it's just, it's so rampant everywhere that it's.
Oh.
We need to get a hold of it. Somehow.
It absolutely is. I think what you're doing is such important. It's such important work. It's such important, especially the younger they are, to equip them with that knowledge and equip, obviously, those that are caring for them with the knowledge, but to empower kids, right, to give them that awareness. Because kids are like sponges when they're really little, and they remember things. And to give them that awareness so early on, you know, you plant that seed, because I'm talking about planting seeds, and just, you know, that is something that they're not going to forget and always going to be aware of. And you're just really, I mean, think about how many situations have been prevented because kids had that knowledge, or they had a feeling that something wasn't right based on what they learned, and they went and they just, you know, went to someone they could trust, or, you know, got out of a situation that they didn't feel comfortable in, even if it's going to a restroom and just feeling like things aren't right. If someone's in there, or they feel someone's watching them or waiting outside the door, and just to, you know, just how that has, you know, expanded, you know, incrementally by having given all that knowledge out over all that time. And even if you do it, you know, virtually twice a month and in person twice a month, I mean, how many kids and people that you're reaching, and just how multiply that, it's just exponential. It's really incredible work.
Well, thank you. I mean, I just do what's already provided, so I feel like I'm not doing much. But I know since they started the curriculum, the Stewards of Children curriculum, and started going out into their communities. It's been about 15 years or so. I mean, Darkness to Light has been around for more like 20 years, but this curriculum has only been around, you know, for about that long, and they're coming out with a new curriculum. And, but, you know, oh, Penelope, I just kind of forgot what I was going to say. It must be getting late or something. Now I'm totally blanking out, but, no, they're coming out with a new curriculum. That's what I was, and so that's pretty exciting to be able to present that now.
Is that new curriculum new information?
Really,
how is it new?
It's kind of the same information. I mean, they're kind of still using the same five steps to protecting your children, which is, you know, understand what is around you and then how you can make that safe around you, and understanding, you know, that you can talk about child sexual abuse prevention and openly and honestly with your family, you know, like we could do if we were younger, and stuff like that. So, and then, so they kind of are still following those same steps, and then how you respond to the child, and then, you know, how to report it. So those are kind of the overall arching thing, but the curriculum video that they had before was just starting to look a little bit dated, and so they totally revamped it, and they're having new survivors, you know, stories and stuff, which is always impactful to have those survivor stories.
Oh, absolutely.
In a curriculum. And it's all, I mean, this, what I love about them is that it's all research-based, so they're not just going to go out and throw something together overnight and say, oh, this is, you know, the number one curriculum in the world. No, they do the research, and they have other universities do research for them and, you know, get statistics back and stuff so that they really know what they're talking about when we go out to present. And they present it to us to go present to other people. So, yeah, it's an amazing organization. It really is. And it's just exciting to be a part of that as well. And I think, like you said, we were talking about how things just kind of start coming together. That's how I felt when I started doing, you know, the Darkness to Light work, is it, things just started coming together, and, you know, jobs were just there. Even, you know, I do have to put a little bit of work into it, but, you know, I think a lot of younger parents these days want to know a little bit more. They want to be prepared. You know, a lot of younger, I think, couples aren't just going in blindly and saying, okay, let's see if we can raise our kids any different or better than our, you know, the last one. They want to know facts and statistics and then ways that they can make it better. Because like we were talking about at the first part of the show, I think a lot of parents these days are probably working. And so they need to have this kind of down precise of this is what I do if my kid breaks their leg. And this is what I do if my kid comes to me and tells me that they've been sexually abused. Or if their friend comes to me and tells me. You know, it's just kind of second nature where you know what to do. Because that's the only way we're going to make a difference.
Yep.
Be open and honest about it all. So talk into the fire. Preach into the fire here.
No, but I mean, but you're right. I mean, parents do get so much information from other parents or other parent figures. And that's what we do get a lot. Yeah. We learn, you know, no one's the handbook on this stuff. And we were talking about, you know, other issues that are circulating around there earlier. I do, you know, it's become less taboo to talk about things that used to be, you know, unspeakable. And so I think that, you know, we are, I think, softening a little bit on the dialogue and allowing that dialogue even amongst parents to, you know, to be able to talk about it. I mean, I don't remember my parents ever talking about, you know, how are we going to protect our kids from sexual abuse and them going to the bathroom, you know? I mean,
right.
Or, you know, being in an environment or anywhere else. That was not a thing. That wasn't even discussed,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Although I do remember Neighborhood Watch, but I don't even know if that may have been when I was in college, you know, Neighborhood Watch coming up into the neighborhoods, and maybe that was me. I can't remember when that was launched. But Neighborhood Watch was more stranger danger. It really wasn't about sexual abuse.
Right. Right.
So the way I interpreted it to be presented so at the time. You know, I think that's, you know, it's benchmarking. We got to keep, you know, benchmarking and, you know, knowing what works and what we've been responded to, and knowing what works enables us to always get better and better at how we deliver messages. And that's awesome that you're starting to light is doing that and relaunching. And that's exciting. It's really exciting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and like we've been talking about too, this whole show, the kids today are so different than, you know, when my kids were kids or when, you know, I was a kid for sure, that we've got to understand how to talk to them about these things. And, you know, we're not going to be able to, you know, just sit at home and Google everything. We've got to be able to be active in, you know, getting the help that we need so that we can help our kids or grandkids as well. So, yeah.
I couldn't agree more. I think communicating with kids these days, because communication methods and modalities have changed, we've got to all be good, know how to communicate with our youth in order to be able to get them to hear us and to listen and to actually be heard. So I totally agree.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
No. Well, we're usually on the same page. So.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for
chatting
with me tonight, Penelope.
Oh, my God, thank you. I know, can you tell that Kim and I don't get along at all? Kim, thank you. I'm so sorry that our special guest couldn't make it. We hope that she is able to reschedule with us. She's got an incredible story to tell. But gosh, Kim, thank you for being my partner in crime here. And to all of you listening, you know, thank you for listening to our show. This is scan number 2976. So thank you, Kim. And as I always say, as I close out the shows, please visit us at nasca.org. That's www.naasca.org. And there are enough adult eyes and ears in this world to keep every one of our children safe. So if you see something, if you hear something, please say something, do something, take action. Thank you and good night. Good night, Kim. Thank you.
Good night. Good
night. Another tomorrow. That dawn was you are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.